Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now, let's get started. For this show, we're going to talk about self-confidence, why we need it, and how we're going to develop it so that we can become successful hosts, successful leaders of community gatherings, of gatherings between organizations, between groups, between people who need to reach a common goal, who need to reach a chord. So let's first define what self-confidence is. Oh, look, we've already got quite a bit of communication, quite a bit of participation. Thank you very much. I love hearing from you. And let's see, we've got some accord here. We've got people that say that self-confidence is, self-confidence is confidence in yourself, but that's using it to define it. It's really the certainty of one's own ability to do something, Ariana says. And she's absolutely right. The certainty that you know what to do and how to do it. And the certainty that I think no matter what happens within the group, within the discussion, within the mediation, that no matter what happens, you can handle it. That if you reach an impasse, we can get out of it and you're going to lead the way. That if perhaps someone, we won't call it misbehaves, but perhaps someone is less than gracious in the group, you know how to handle that too. And we have been discussing those issues, haven't we, in prior shows. If you are new to this program, welcome. Welcome everyone who's coming back. Welcome all the new ones. And if you are new, these shows are indeed archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And the full selection of shows that have been done are archived on blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So you can listen to anything you would like. But really, self-confidence is knowing what to do and how to do it and having the confidence, the thought, the faith. Yes, the faith. I have several people that tell me it's really the faith in yourself. Yes, the faith in yourself to believe that you know what to do and you can do it. We're all going to go forward. And, of course, we all have a certain amount of self-confidence. And this makes us very effective. It makes us good leaders, good hosts, good coordinators. Yes, yes. And Jacqueline asked an interesting question. She said, isn't this actually a self-fulfilling prophecy? And for those of you who have been with me for some time, we've discussed self-fulfilling prophecy, haven't we? And we rather discussed it rather extensively in a negative way, as in you can have a self-fulfilling prophecy that causes failure. But this is a wonderful thing, isn't it? It's a positive self-fulfilling prophecy. Yes, you're absolutely right, Jacqueline. Thank you. Thank you for sending that in. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy that I have confidence in myself, that I can, that I will, that I know how. You see, that's a wonderful thing. That's a really positive self-fulfilling prophecy, and those are the best kinds. Because, quite frankly, if it can be negative and be powerful, well, certainly, as we discussed in our self-fulfilling prophecy show, well, certainly it can also be positive And that's wonderful, and it will take you far. Yes, self-fulfilling prophecies have a great deal of power, and self-confidence is in of itself a wonderful, positive, self-fulfilling prophecy. Thank you, Jacqueline. That's a really good way of thinking about it. Yes, I always say this, but I always learn something in these shows, and I hope that you do too. That's a different way of thinking about self-confidence, and it's wonderful. And Adriana says that and several other people are writing in too, and everyone's saying, if you have confidence, if you develop self-confidence, then will you achieve the goals that you set out to do? Well, there's no guarantees in life, right? But if you have self-confidence as the leader, I think it will in itself influence other people in the room positively. You see, if you're positive that the goal can be reached, that accord can be reached, that we can all act in a reasonable and convivial manner, if you're positive and you're the leader, if you're the host, you are naturally the leader of this particular meeting, right? Right. You don't have to be the leader of a side of a group to be a leader. You are naturally the leader if you're the person that's hosting the assembly. If you have confidence, well, let's think about this. Oh, look, Adriana has used a good word. She says that confidence is contagious, and that is true. If you are certain and act from a point of certainty, then the others in the room will think, well, wow, that's certain. That's maybe I think so too. You see, confidence is contagious. Just like lack of confidence is contagious. And if you ever been in a group, yes, I see several people have said, are telling me that fear and distrust are contagious. That's contagious too, but so is confidence. You see, people are easily influenced by those around them. Some people more than others, of course. They are influenced by people who have a strong conviction. And you, my friends, will have a strong conviction in yourself, because that's what self-confidence is. And they are easily influenced. You know, it's common to call it peer pressure, right? People bow to the stronger personalities in the group. And if the strongest personality is one of positiveness and self-confidence and assurance that we can get the job done, that will make a positive atmosphere. If, on the other hand, the strongest person in the group is negative and certain that there will be failure, well, that will be contagious too. So we need to make an atmosphere of confidence that we can go forward, that we can achieve our goal. You know, that's one of the reasons, really, that Recipe for Peace Now advocates making a convivial atmosphere and the use of the food. It's not because you're hungry. Really, it's not a dinner event. It's really to encourage a positive atmosphere, to encourage people to think before they speak, and to be able to do some mingling that is not formal, you see? And it creates a convivial atmosphere. It creates an atmosphere of positiveness. And that's what we're trying to do, because we've got groups, we've got people, we've got size, we've got whatever it is you're dealing with who are perhaps inclined, given their druthers, without any kind of leadership, to think in a negative manner towards reaching the common goal. They don't really think they kind of can. And we're going to show them that although it may not be simple, it is attainable, and it is the right thing to do. Yes, this is all good, and that's we're going to lead with confidence. We're going to keep, I see quite a few people have told me that the reason you need self-confidence is to keep control of the group. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. This is wonderful. I've got lots of people, and it's wonderful to have you all here. Thank you very much. And the answer is absolutely positively. The key is that we want to have everyone thinking not in the same direction. They don't have to be thinking the same thing, but they have to be going towards the middle. You see? That's really the key. The key is, and you as the leader will exert some control over that to keep everyone on the path, to keep everyone going forward, to prevent the process, if we can call it that, from either stagnating or even worse, going backwards, losing ground, not forging ahead, just kind of going into despair about the whole thing. And that happens easily. People get discouraged. And that's why we are creating the convivial atmosphere. And that's why our host, our leader, our person who is the person in charge, you might even, as I often am when I'm doing a mediation, you might even be an impartial third party asked to, well, for lack of a better word, asked to referee. Yes, I see that quite a few of you have done that. And, oh, I see that some of you have done it rather unsuccessfully. You say you'll never do it again. Whoops. There's a few people. There's Randy and Adriana and like that. And you say that you've been the third party impartial, the referee, so to speak. And it's a tough thing to do. Yes, it is, and it takes some research and some real thought beforehand to be the impartial third party, because you don't want to get dragged into a side. But that, my friends, is perhaps a topic for another session. In fact, we'll have to think about that as a topic. Okay, so now let's think about self-confidence in and of itself. And I'm going to pose a question that I see that quite a few people have asked. And it's a very, very good one. And the question is, how do you develop self-confidence? How? How do you develop self-confidence? And yes, we're not born with it, for heaven's sakes. You have to develop it. Self-confidence, well, I think some people are more naturally outgoing, which gives you a certain amount of self-confidence to speak before others, and lack of nervousness in that respect. But look, we have a lot of people. Let's take these answers in order, because they're just wonderful, and you really got the idea, and there are all kinds of different ways to develop self-confidence. And thank you very much for participating. I really enjoy hearing from you, and I'm very impressed because, quite frankly, I didn't have these many ways to develop self-confidence. It's like, oh my, now I have something to say. Fantastic. Talisha says, and several other people have said that the way to develop self-confidence is to practice. You know what? That's a very good idea, because practice makes perfect. No, just kidding. But, well, actually it does. But if you practice and she says to look at the world through self-confidence eyes in all matters, that's wonderful. That's an attitude, really, to practice and to not just break out your self-confidence just when you're in one of these situations where you're the host, where you're the leader, where you're trying to reach a core, but to act with self-confidence frequently and in most situations. Yeah, that's practice. Oh, my. Talisha says that she was thinking more literally, and that she asked, now this is a good idea. I haven't done this, but I see that other people have also, as I scroll this down, I see that other people have also commented on this. She meant, and a lot of people meant it in a more literal sense than I took the word practice. They actually practice like in front of a mirror. And I see people practice using a video camera and replaying it back and looking at it and seeing their mannerisms and seeing how they project and like that. And it's a fantastic idea. What a good idea to practice in a very literal sense, like your opening remarks. You know, you can't practice the whole thing because you don't know what people are going to say, right? You don't know what situation is going to arise. But you can practice what you're going to say to the group, practice you know what I mean? You can practice certain things so that they come out not hopefully scripted, but kind of what you want to say, especially when you are new at this game, when you are rather, well, inexperienced, and experience takes practice. Experience is something that you keep doing, and practice, literal practice, is a real good idea. Yes, and I see that several people have added that when they do, thank you everyone, when they do a video practice, when they tape themselves and like that, they ask other people to look at it and make comments about it. Not obviously, I'm going to say this, but I think this is obvious, but I'm going to say it anyway. Not, of course, people in the group that you're about to deal with, right? Like your mother or something, you would ask them to look at it and see what they think, but not someone who is going to be there when you're actually doing your mediation, your community meeting, your get-together in real time in a real manner. So, yes, that's a wonderful idea. Practice, literal practice, as well as practice in the world each time you go out into the world. Yes, that's a wonderful idea. And Shanchala says that in addition to practice, you can do research. Well, that's a really good idea, too. And we have just talked about it, especially in the impartial third-party manner. Right? Right. Shoshala and other people say yes, that it is. I see that people are taking research also somewhat literally, and yes, I think that it is very important to come prepared to any kind of a get-together, to any kind of any of these events, the mediations, the community get-togethers, whatever it is that you're doing. It's very important to be prepared because otherwise the whole thing will fall flat, especially if you have a relatively complicated issue or something that involves statistics, numbers, historical fact. You see, these things are very important to get straight, and that you want to come prepared. You might also do a little bit of research if you're going to have a speaker, a guest. You might do a little research on the people and what their background is and what they have said in the past. You see, research is very important to your self-confidence because it gives you confidence that you know what you're doing in this specific arena, you see? And yes, I do quite a bit of research. Depending on the people are asking if I do research still and if I practice still. The answer is for the practice part, you all know that I've been doing this nearly 30 years. I started as a small child. No, just kidding. I've been doing this a very long time. I've been doing it nearly 30 years. And therefore, I don't literally practice in front of a video camera or practice in front of a mirror. I don't write out what I'm going to say because I really do have a lot of practice and experience. And but if you are fairly new, and even I have seen people who have even more experience than I do, who have a great deal of practical experience. I have seen them come with index cards or come with something written out, which, goodness gracious, I hope they don't actually read word for word, because we all know that's dull. But they come with notes, is what they come with. I don't usually practice and do notes ahead of time unless, and this goes to the research part, and this I sure enough do always, depending on, I suppose, how complex the matter is, but frequently I come with notes as to what I would deem research, and that is the historical, the numbers, where to find something, actual facts that impact the actual wording of a law, the actual wording of a regulation, how these things are worded in other places. You see, it depends what we're doing, of course, but this is very important, and you might even have some reference material with you. I personally, you all know because you've heard me say this before, I usually like my reference material to be in note form so that I can remember it for like years or numbers or something. But I'm not real fond, unless you can't help it, of passing out papers because at the event itself, because I think it's a way for people to leave the conversation. They hide behind the piece of paper, they pretend to be reading it, they study it, and they don't participate in the discussion anymore. It's a way to leave the room, so to speak. Now, I do indeed greatly favor the use of an email attachment with information that may be needed that everyone should think about, that we're going to be discussing and like that. But I'm not real fond of having lots of papers and things passed out because I don't think it makes for a good discussion where we're all looking each other in the eye and getting somewhere. You see, I think that it tends, depending on the situation, to bog things down a speck. So yes, research, very much so. I do it constantly. Practice, I practice every day, and I practice with people in groups, in workshops, in seminars, and speeches, and like that. So I, because of the amount, level of experience, I don't really do it on a video anymore. But if, when I started, and I admit this freely, there was no such thing, if I had that kind of free access when I first started, I sure would have. Yes, it's a very, very good idea. And Rodney actually has made a good point, and I'm sure that a lot of people will agree with this. He says that self-confidence means that you don't dwell on your mistakes and that you view them as learning experience. Yes, you can't... we're still on how to develop self-confidence, right? Yes, that's the topic. I didn't mean to digress. And he says, don't dwell on mistakes. View them as learning experiences. What a good way of saying it. Thank you, Rodney, and thank you for everyone that's agreeing and kind of annotating it and like that. And that's very important. We all make mistakes. We all say things that lead in a direction we didn't intend, and we all are smarter after the fact than we might have been in person, in reality. That's just human nature. You know the old expression, hindsight is 20/20? Well, yes, it is. And even with all my experience, I have days like that. Boy, I sure do. But the key is that when I make a mistake and when you make a mistake or have an unintended consequence, that it will not be because of something deliberate. It will not be because of something rude. And it will not hinder, it will not shake our self-confidence. Everybody makes boo-boos. Everybody makes mistakes occasionally. We will admit them, correct them, ignore them, depending on the circumstances, depending how big, and we will go on because we have self-confidence. And it's not been shaken at all now, has it? No. And Indira has something very intelligent. She says that this is really an attitude adjustment to see yourself as a winner. An attitude adjustment to see yourself as a winner. Thank you, Indira. That is a very good point, you see, because we're all going to win by the end of our sessions together, aren't we? We're going to reach accord. We're going to reach a common goal. And we're going to set the groundwork that we can do it again next time something arises. Next time something arises between the groups, between the people, between whoever it is. You see? And that's an attitude adjustment, which is our self-confidence, that we will, as a group, not necessarily as an individual, because remember there are no losers when we get done. We all are winners. And we've all had to accept some concessions and like that, but we have had an experience that makes us wish to repeat it and makes us wish to go forward in good faith and like that. And so, yes, self-confidence is really the promotion of the idea that you're going to be winners. All of you are going to be winners, yes. And the other people in the group have self-confidence too, not just the host. I mean, this is not just all by yourselves. And Randy says that's really the desire to lead. Yes, and I see a lot of people are saying yes. Basically speaking, with very few exceptions, historically at least, the strongest personality is the one in the group is the one with the most self-confidence. Can we say that? Generally speaking. Now, we're talking about a group of people who have come to be reasonable and are not bombastic in some way. That's not a strong personality. That, my friends, is an obnoxious personality. And that we have already talked about, and that is also for the discussion for a different show. But so people with a great deal of self-confidence tend to be leaders. Randy is exactly right, because people want to follow them. They want to emulate them. They can see that they know what they're doing. And everybody likes to follow somebody that knows what they're doing. It's kind of like, well, would you follow somebody who does this, who keeps going backwards and sideways and falling down? Or would you follow somebody who's marching ahead and says, follow me, I know where I'm going, and we can all get there together, and we're gonna accomplish this. You see? Everybody wants to lead because you have self-confidence that you can, yes. And Bernie says that's really a passion for the goals at hand and a passion for the cause. And yes, self-confidence and leadership and everything are heightened by, of course, legitimate passion for whatever it is that we're trying to do. And I think it's fair to say that, generally speaking, all of the participants in the event, in whatever kind of a get-together you have, that all of the participants have a passion for the goal, for the cause. They would like to see it go forward. They would like to reach accord. They just don't know how. They need someone with the self-confidence to show them, to lead the discussion in how are we going to accomplish this. How's this going to work out? How are we going to get that? And I see that quite a few people, Elizabeth especially and others, say that you can have an outside influence. Let me say what I think you're saying, and because it's kind of a I see kind of long paragraphs here. And thank you very much for the participation. I'm going to sum them up. If this is not exactly what you meant, it's kind of like practice. Tell me and Will that this is what I think that all of you have said, that you can have self-confidence is influenced by outside faith and family backing and your role in society and like that. Is that a fair statement, people that have – I've got quite a few people. Elizabeth has sent me quite a long – yeah, she said that I've gotten the gist of it, that it's outside influences create self-confidence. Let me think about that. We've got some dissension here. People say that that's not self-confidence because self-confidence is internal. Well, it's a point, though, because the internal is oftentimes affected by external factors, right? Right. It's affected by your standing, perhaps, in society. The caste system, but not, I didn't mean it in that way. In terms of the caste system doesn't exist anymore. You're absolutely right. I don't know anything about that. But I meant more whether or not you have a professional background or something that makes you an expert. You see, yes, I'm getting agreement with that causes self-confidence, and it causes the other people to look to you as the expert, which is indeed an outside factor that will encourage you to have self-confidence because they have confidence in your abilities and in your expertise. So, yes, in that sense, self-confidence can be from outside. Sean says education and training. And that is what causes self-confidence. And yes, being an expert gives you more confidence just because you're sure that you know what you're talking about. You're sure that you know what you're doing. And therefore, yes, you do have that. That's an outside, I'll accept that, an outside influence. Elizabeth says that, well, it depends. Wow, that really depends on the group. And whether or not, Elizabeth says that she really meant an outside influence, that when she gets together the group, the community, whatever it is, they pray. They pray to God they use faith as an outside influence to give them the confidence to go on. I'm not objecting to it. I think, you know, that my theory is whatever works is a really good idea. That is indeed an outside influence. That's fair enough. It really depends on the group. And I see a lot of dissension with the thought and a lot of discussion about it, and you're absolutely right. I think that depends on whether or not the people in the group, in the room, the people who are trying to reach the common goal really do have a common religious background. I don't care what the religious background is, but if you have a common religious background, and especially, and I see a lot of people agreeing with that, especially, and I see this coming out too, especially if the group is in some way faith-based to begin with, it's a church group, it's a religious affiliated, the issues are religious affiliation, but it's the same affiliation, they're having something to do with the issues at hand, are religiously affiliated, and the people are all the same religion, it's just a question of how to get to the common goal. Yes, that would be an appropriate thing to do. But if the people are all different and the issues are non-religious, that's a real judgment call. I would advise against it. If you think that you would like, yes, this is. I see a lot of people saying this, and it's a really good idea. I do not generally do it, but I see a lot of people are saying that if you would like to invoke the help of the Lord, that you should have a moment of silence for prayer and not have anyone particularly lead it so that everyone can invoke their faith in the way that they see fit. And I think that's a real valid point. That if you would like to have an outside help for your self-confidence, for the confidence of the group, for the self-confidence of everybody in it, and you feel that faith would be a good thing, yes, I think a moment of prayer would be a nice, unless you're very certain, I think it should indeed be a silent moment of prayer, because that's personal. And you don't want to have someone object or be offended on something that really doesn't have to do with the issues at hand and get them all excited. You know, it goes through the convivial atmosphere. I don't generally do it. I do indeed happen to be a Christian, but I don't generally invoke Jesus outright at the beginning of the meeting or something, unless it is very appropriate, and then I usually defer to an expert in the room, such as a priest or a person who is a pastor, or you know what I mean, somebody who is a religious professional. But I don't usually do it. I have seen it done, and I'm very much in favor of the moment of silent prayer. That's certainly not inappropriate, and nobody will object to that. Okay. I've had several people asking about what kind of training and education and like that you can take in order to develop self-confidence and this leadership concept. The answer is, we're already getting some answers. Thank you. Sean says assertiveness training. I'm never quite sure what those things are, but I think that any kind of training that encourages your self-confidence, I think that speaking practice classes are always fun. I'm afraid I think that because I do a lot of leadership training. We talk about how to lead, how to act, how to deal with different types of people. I do some how to speak training. I've had people tell me that they like to take acting classes because it allows them to get on the stage and to play a role. You see, kind of a role playing. Donald says role playing. He says that if you do education and training, you should do role playing. And that is, a lot of workshops do that. I've led workshops where there have been role-playing. And it is quite effective in an employment situation, for example, and in other things. We do a lot of role-playing. We do a lot of thinking about it, if nothing else. And it will develop your self-confidence because it will give you some expertise. Yes, I see a lot of people have taken acting and speaking classes. All right, I've never actually been to one of these, so I'm not positive. I will just say it because I've got, like, really a lot of people telling me that that's what they did and they really liked it. I do not know this group, unlike Rotary, which they're saying that Toastmasters and other organizations like that are very good to develop self-confidence and to develop leadership. And I believe... Am I incorrect? Tell me if I'm not. I believe that Toastmasters encourages you to get up and do public speaking. Is this true? Yes, I see a lot of yeses. It will indeed give you some self-confidence to lead and to also do public speaking. I've never actually done Toastmasters, but it's undoubtedly a very good organization. Okay. So now that we've decided how to develop self-confidence, Should we talk a little about why we need it? Or have we already covered that? And Hernando says, because every group and every goal, every cause needs leaders. And that's true, Hernando and other people. Thank you. Thank you for your participation. And it's true, every group, every goal, every cause needs leaders. And we, my friends, are going to become that. We're going to use our self-confidence, and we're going to go forward. And Kevin says that if you have self-confidence, you have the authority and the ability to help control the outcome. Yes, that's the whole idea. You want to, I'm going to call it focus, even though that's a word that's somewhat overused. You want to keep the group focused so that you can, so that you can get an outcome that's reasonable, that has a chord, and you can control the process so that you don't get off track. You see, that's the whole idea of the thing, that the leader will have the self-confidence to keep us all going in the right direction, going forward. Forward is always the right direction, right? And we've all been to meetings where they get kind of off the track. They get turned around, and nobody knows what they're doing anymore, and nobody's in charge, and it gets kind of, well, how shall I put this delicately? It gets kind of annoying. And then you don't want to go again, because it was a waste of time, right? And time is something none of us can afford to waste. So that's the idea of it, that you don't want to, you know, Claudia says you want to control the process so that you don't get off the track. And yeah, that's the idea. And if you have the confidence to control the outcome, to the self-confidence to control your own responses too, so that it doesn't become heated, so that the engagement is good, that it's convivial. You know, I know that I stress that quite a bit, and it's the trick of using the food. And yes, people are going, when are we going to get to the recipes? Yes, we are. But that's the recipe for peace now trick, you see. The trick is to create a convivial atmosphere and keep it going so that we control the fact with our leadership abilities and our self-confidence in ourselves, in the outcome, in the cause, in the goal, so that we stay on track to keep pushing forward so that we can reach an agreement, so that we can reach accord, and that we're going to be the overriding purpose will get accomplished, you see? And so we'll reach the goal. And now that we've talked about the trick of using the food, we've now reached that part in our show that I swear half of you think is the best part of all, where we're going to think about a couple of recipes for sharing with the community for a potluck. You know, I favor potlucks. And I know you're all shaking your heads, and I've got people going label as they, you know, they're writing it in because they know exactly what I'm going to say. But it's very, very important, and I say it every time because it is so important. When you're going to have people bringing food, before they do it, email them, call them, do whatever you need to do. Everyone needs to carefully label what their food is, what's in it, not just the title of it, but what's in it, because you will have people who have allergies, you will have people who have dietary restrictions, religious dietary restrictions. You will also ask this of your participants, whether or not they have some sort of restriction, because for heaven's sakes, we don't want anybody to get sick. We don't want anybody to get offended. And we don't want anyone to get panicky. It's supposed to be a good thing. They're supposed to be able to eat the food. And if they can't eat the food, that's why we've labeled what's in it, because they'll know not to eat it and you won't have the problem. So please, 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 we're going to label whatever we bring, whatever anybody else brings, say everything that's in it, even the condiments. You've heard me talk about my friend who was allergic to vinegar. People are allergic to all kinds of things, or they have dietary restrictions. So label, label, label. Very important. And you know, of course, if you've heard this show before, and I know a lot of you have, thank you for coming back, and welcome to the people who are new. But you've heard me say before that it's very important that we have the host, you as the host, not only have enough food, but also I am very much in favor of the host having a safe dish. Now, what do I mean by a safe recipe as opposed to an adventure recipe? And yes, some of you are writing in that you know this. Yes, I know, but not everybody knows it. A safe recipe, in my personal opinion, is one that generally has ingredients that most people are not allergic to or have religious or dietary prohibitions against, does not have a whole giant laundry list of ingredients, and is basically capable of being looked at to see what's in it. That's what I think is a safe recipe. So the first one that we're going to do today, and I'm going to bend over and put on my glasses so that I can, so that I don't give you something wrong. The first one that we're going to do today is going to be our safe recipe. And it's the pumpkin pasta. You know, it's fall and it seems like a good thing to have. And pumpkins are all over. May I just tell you that, please, it's kind of like the thing I say at Easter time. I know that you've got leftover Easter eggs, the hard-boiled kind. Don't use them if they're stale.
Yes.
Yes. If the jack-o'-lanterns had it, don't use the pumpkin and eat it. I know that seems like a ridiculous thing to say, that people get kind of, they hate to throw it out, but it's been sitting there for a really long time and it's really not good to eat anymore. Don't use it in the recipe, please. Use a fresh one. The pumpkins are readily available at this time of year. Okay, so this is going to be our pumpkin pasta. First of all, we're going to have 2 pounds of fresh pumpkin cut into small cubes. If you really would like to use the canned pumpkin, not the canned pumpkin pie stuff, just the straight canned pumpkin, be sure and drain it really well. That's in juice or something, and it's really wet. If you really want to, you can, but drain it, drain it, drain it, drain it. Drain it through a cheesecloth. Make sure it's really, really drained out. Okay, you can't just pat that. So I'm going to say 2 pounds of fresh pumpkin, cut into cubes, and then we're going to have a pound of white pasta of some sort, whatever you like, and about 6 tablespoons of butter, and an onion that we're going to slice nice and thin, and about 6 ounces of bacon that we're going to dice, cooked bacon. Going to dice it. About a tablespoon of olive oil, 2 garlic cloves that we're going to crush. Yes, I know I put garlic in everything. That's what somebody just said. You put garlic in everything. Yes, I do. If you don't like garlic, keep it out. And we're going to have about 1.5 cups of white breadcrumbs, because we're going to put that on top. 2/3 cup of heavy cream, and 2/3 cup of grated Parmesan. Now, we're going to also, for the herbs and the taste, we're going to have 2 tablespoons of parsley, 1 tablespoon of fresh chives, chopped, and, of course, salt and pepper to taste. So, basically speaking, if you want to make this more vegetarian, you could leave out the bacon. I kind of like the bacon because it gives it a lovely flavor and like that. But if you to really make it a safe dish that most people can eat, a lot of people cannot eat pork for one reason or another, dietary, religious, just don't like it. The thing to leave out would be the bacon if you're not positive about your people. But other than that, this is a pretty safe dish. You can see it. It's basically vegetarian if you take the bacon out. And It's good. Okay. So I think we should break out two pots for this. We're going to have boiling water in each one of them, and we're going to place the pumpkin cubes in one and the pasta in the other. And we're going to cook them both for about 10 minutes. Ha! We've got them both going. We're softening the pumpkin, and we are making the pasta al dente. Yay! And while that's cooking for the 10, 15 minutes, depending on how it goes, you put them in water that's already boiling, we're going to heat about half of the butter, and we're going to fry the onion and the bacon for about 5 minutes. Remember, no bacon if you want to make it more vegetarian. Yeah. But anyway, that'll make it delicious. And then we're going to melt the remaining butter with the oil in a frying pan, a different one, different frying pan. And we're going to add the garlic and the breadcrumbs. And we're going to cook the crumbs until they're golden brown and crisp. We're going to kind of fry them. And then I think you should drain it, because otherwise it'll make the top kind of greasy. Ah, yes, someone has asked me, can you use crispy onions from the little can? Well, why not? I'm all in favor of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I like the crispy onions. I confess this. But the breadcrumbs will give less of a taste, and that will give an oniony taste. So you got to think about that. It may overpower the pumpkin. I had to think about it for a second. Okay. Now, the pumpkin is done, right? We're going to drain it. We're going to drain the pumpkin and add it to the onion and bacon mixture that we have in the one pan. And then we're going to add the cream. And we're going to heat the whole thing until the cream is just below the boiling point, so it's really hot. Then we're going to drain the pasta and add it to the pan and heat it through and stir it around. Not too hard, because you don't want to squish the pumpkin cubes. And then we're going to stir in the Parmesan, the parsley, the chives, and the seasoning. We're going to mix it all up. It's all hot. It's all delicious. And then we're going to take our breadcrumbs that we have added to the garlic in the frying pan. Yes, yes. We're going to take our garlic breadcrumbs, and we're going to sprinkle them on top. Yum. So that's my safe recipe. It's a nice fall recipe. You can leave out the bacon if you want to make it even safer. Usually people are not allergic to the things in this. I know there's gluten and like that, so you have to ask. You have to ask in advance. But it is delicious. It is warm. It can be made ahead of time. And there you have it. That's a lovely pumpkin pasta that pretty much everybody likes. And pumpkins are in season now. Because when they're not in season, well, they're not as easy to cut. And yes, of course, you can use pre-diced pumpkin. I didn't even know there was such a thing. I know that there's people are telling me that you can get pumpkin cubes, like in the produce section, already cubed, like pineapple. Yes? Yes. I see everybody's going, yes. Good. I don't have that in my grocery store, but good. If you can do that, more power to you, because quite frankly, pumpkins are a little tough to cut. But they're seasonal, and once you got them cut, delicious. And remember, if you're going to use something that has a liquid in the pumpkin processing, drain them very carefully, because you don't want this thing to be watery. Okay, so that was my safe recipe, right? Not too many ingredients. You can pretty much see what's in it. We're going to label it anyway. Most people are not allergic to it. Some people have pork prohibitions, and like this, you could leave out the bacon. Yes. And no, you can't cheat and use bacon bits. Quite a few people have asked about bacon bits. The bacon bits I'm thinking of are hard and dry, and they just don't blend well with the recipe. Either if you don't want to mess with the bacon, just leave the bacon out. But don't substitute something that will not have a pleasant consistency in the dish. You understand? So, yeah, you can make it without the bacon, but don't substitute something that is like little chewy stones. I guess I think that's what bacon bits taste like. But yeah, don't overdo the substitutions. You just leave it out and it'll be fine. Okay. Now we're going to go to our adventure recipe. That wasn't a very good ad for bacon bits, was it? We're going to go to our adventure recipe. This is an adventure recipe because it has quite a few ingredients. It has shellfish, which a lot of people are allergic to and or have religious prohibitions against, and therefore you must tell everyone. And also, you know, I'm going to say the same thing that I generally say about soups, which is essentially what a gumbo is. If you're going to have a real potluck and it's on your carpet or on somebody's carpet, soups are a little bit messy. You have to decide if that's okay. But I'm going to say that this is not as much a soup because we're going to serve it over rice. And, of course, you have the big bowl of rice next to it, the big bowl of cooked rice, steamed rice, and the big bowl of the big pot of gumbo. And you take the rice and you ladle the gumbo on top of it to serve. It's a little bit messier and it takes more utensils than some potluck things. So you have to decide if that's okay with the group of people that you're having. Here's my shrimp gumbo. It's very nice and it's very thick. Okay, we're going to take 5 quarts of cold water, 2 large bay leaves, a teaspoon of dried thyme, a small lemon, kind of a medium lemon, but we're going to slice it real thin, about a tablespoon of salt, 2 pounds of medium shrimp, not those little scrawny ones, 4 tablespoons of butter, 4 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, about a half cup of chopped onion, about kind of an onion, smallish onion chopped, 2 large cloves of garlic minced. Yes, there goes the garlic again. Traditionally, it has okra. I'm going to say a 10-ounce package of frozen okra, which we're going to, of course, unfreeze, and we're going to drain so that it's not wet and soggy. 3/4 of a cup of chopped green pepper. And I've seen people add Tabasco sauce. I think it gives a nice kick to it, but if that's spicy, I am very much in favor of putting the Tabasco sauce on the side. So I'm going to leave the Tabasco sauce out of this recipe. Sometimes, if I'm making it for people I'm certain of, I make Tabasco. But other than that, well, anyway. And we're going to have a whole steamer, a whole 6 cups of cooked rice, a whole bunch of cooked rice to pour the gumbo over for serving, right? But that's going to be in a separate pot and in a separate dish on the potluck table. So that doesn't involve us cooking it in that sense. But we know that that is what the gumbo is served on top of. Yes? Yes. Okay. So we've got our ingredients. We're going to put in a big pot because we need 5 quarts of water, right? On a high heat, we're going to put into the water the bay leaves, the thyme, the lemon, and the salt. And we're going to bring it to a rapid boil. We're going to drop in the shrimp that we're going to first tie into a cheesecloth because we're going to fish those little suckers out of there. And you can use a slotted spoon, but believe me, you'll be happier and it'll be faster if you tie them into a cheesecloth just all together and dip and put them in and then cook them till they're pink. That's about 5 minutes. And then take them out. See, you take them out with the whole bag instead of having to fish them with the slotted spoon. Now, while you're boiling the broth, see, it keeps boiling, right? You're going to shell and devein the shrimp, and you're going to save the shells because we're going to use them to flavor the broth. So we've got the shrimp that are now cooked. They've been deveined. They've been shelled. And we're going to take those shells and stick them in the cheesecloth bag, and we're going to throw that back into the broth. And we're going to boil the whole thing until it's reduced to about 3 quarts. We're going to reduce it, say it's going to steam off. And while that's reducing, while it's boiling, in a large saucepan over kind of a low heat, we're going to melt the butter and stir in the flour, and we're going to stir that constantly. Is that what's called a roux? Yeah, people are saying that they think it is. Yeah. And anyway, we're going to stir the flour and the butter constantly. And we're going to add the onions and the garlic, and we're going to cook it for about 5 minutes. Then we're going to add the okra, which we've drained, right? and it's no longer frozen, and green pepper, and continue to cook, still stirring it constantly. Now we've got this all stirred up and it's all nice and smooth, and we're going to pour it into the broth, and we're going to add, and then we're going to reduce the heat, and we're going to simmer it for about an hour. We're going to, I usually cover it a little bit because we don't need to steam off the water anymore. So we're going to reduce the heat and simmer about an hour, partially covered. Then we're going to fish out our bag of shrimp shells hot. That's why we used the cheesecloth, right, that we tied really tight so it didn't get apart on us. And we're going to get rid of the shells. And we're now going to add the shrimp that we already cooked for about 3 minutes. And we're going to simmer it for about 2 minutes. We're going to add the salt and pepper, and we are done, people. We have a lovely gumbo. We are going to serve it over the rice. We're going to ladle it over the rice. It's going to be delicious. It is our adventure recipe because a lot of people are allergic to it. It has to be labeled very, very clearly that it is shrimp. And the other ingredients, too, need to be labeled, but shrimp is the main one because people are indeed allergic to shrimp. That is a fairly common allergy, and that is something that you will have asked ahead of time. And if they're not allergic, there are religions that do not eat shellfish, just as they do not eat pork. And that's something to know also. See, those are important things to take into consideration. That's what makes it our adventure recipe. But it is delicious, especially when the weather gets colder, and very, very popular. I am in favor, as you all know, of putting Tabasco and other heavy seasonings on the side, on the counter, on the sideboard where the potluck is being, where things are being placed, where the food is being placed. I'm very much in favor of leaving condiments like that in the original packaging so you can see what they are and not adding them in, not stirring them in. Because you can always add, but you can't take out. Oh, I'm such a genius. Anyway, thank you very much. Our time together is up, as I see. And I have learned something. I hope that you have learned something, too. I hope that you've enjoyed it. Thank you for the returning people. Thank you to the new people. Please return. If you want to hear archived shows, they are on www.recipeforpeacenow.com. There's some archived there. All of the shows are archived on blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And if you would like to contact me, like to contact any of us, come to think of it, you can do so at send in questions. And oftentimes people send in ideas for a show. And I do indeed look at that. And I think, you know, that's a really good idea. I didn't think about doing that, but it's rather the progression of life. And I would love to. So send me ideas and comments and recipes and whatever you'd like to recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. You can also visit the website. There is a contact page at recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope that you will come again next Saturday. Thank you. Bye-bye.